Let's get this party started.
Welcome to the I Squint Podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to this, the I Squint Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Lang. In this, the seventh episode, I sat down with Rob Halliday and we talked about control. Lighting control and consoles, that is. Rob is not only a freelance lighting designer and programmer, he too is a huge fan of lighting control and writes columns for both Lighting and Sound International and Lighting and Sound America. You can read some of his great console reviews in either magazine or on the magazine's websites. Now, with the trade show season gearing up and the economy hopefully on the rebound, Rob and I thought we would share our ideas and opinions on what to look for in your next lighting console. Rob and I had a tendency to go a little bit off topic and discuss some of the things we are personally looking for in future development of lighting desk. We mentioned these things as something to keep in the back of your head for future console reference. We also mentioned a couple brands and specific consoles during our talk. No, we are not endorsing or being paid by any manufacturers. We just use the specific consoles as references as they're pretty well known in the industry. Our goal is to help you begin to think about what you want out of your next lighting console and some of the questions you should not only ask yourself, but lighting console manufacturers. Talking about lighting consoles and reading website after website is a great way to compare the differences between desks, but that can only get you so far. What about seeing how a desk works and functions? Well, Rob and I mentioned a couple of ways to get familiar with the desk, as well as getting a chance to see them in person. So, without further ado, here's my talk with Mr. Rob Halliday. So I'm here with Mr. Rob Halliday. You may know him from a couple of his articles that he's written around the world, not only in LSA, Lighting and Sound America, but LSA, Lighting and Sound UK. Where else have you written?
Anyone will pay me. Just about everywhere now, I think.
Well, thanks, Rob, for doing the podcast with me. I'm pretty excited to talk with you about some consoles here.
Okay, let's talk.
So let's begin. You know, I personally get asked a lot of questions, or, you know, what console do I need? Tell me what console I want. And I hate pushing a specific console on people. You know, it's not necessarily, here's the perfect console for you. You know, I need to know some background information. So I want to get your opinion on what people should be asking. You know, I've got a certain list of questions here, and I'm sure you've got a bunch that you can ask as well.
I mean, I think the first thing I say to people now is don't fall for the hype, if you like, because the manufacturers are always going to tell you all the good things that their console can do and all the amazing things it can do and all the fantastic things it can do. And I'm not knocking them for that, because I like the manufacturers and they make good products. But what they will often not do, particularly at a trade show, is tell you all the things that their product won't do. And sometimes now that's really obvious things, like a lot of new consoles don't understand the concept of a downtime on a queue, the lights fading out, going a different time from the lights fading in. Mm-hmm. And it's just being very aware to ask the questions that seem very obvious to you, because sometimes now they're not no longer obvious to the people who are actually making the consoles. Well, and if you buy the console and then find it doesn't do it, then it's too late. Exactly. So it's just be very aware of what you're asking is the first thing I'd say. And that applies to whatever console you end up looking at or buying.
And, you know, that's why I wanted to, you know, discuss these points with you, because a lot of people just don't know what to ask for.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and we had our little list that we've conjured up together. So maybe we should just talk through some of the things we think. So I think the first thing we came up with was like the size of your rig that you're dealing with at the moment.
Exactly, yep.
Because on a practical level, lots of them now sell, there seem to be three ranges of consoles. There seem to be little consoles for small theatres and schools and that kind of thing. And there seem to be medium-sized consoles, and then there seem to be big consoles that then scale more. And sometimes they're different families of consoles. So ETC have the little one, which is called the Smart Fade, mm-hmm. I believe. And then they have the range, which is the element, the Ion EOS range, and that kind of covers all their other bases. And I think, you know, if you were, as an extreme example, if you were a school with 20 dimmers, there's no point in you owning an EOS. You know, it's too complicated. It doesn't do anything you need to do, and probably you can't afford it.
Exactly.
We won't want to spend all that money on that. You know, and there, if you're just controlling that number of dimmers, and you probably want to have hands-on control, a little desk with faders, and this is another thing we'll come on to, but it's how you actually control the lights, is probably perfect for you. You know, and then after that, you just need to look at your numbers and the size of your rig and the desk and whether it can actually deal with it. But the thing you need to be aware of there is how they all count the number of things they support, because they all seem to do that in a slightly different way from each other. Because sometimes what you're buying is a number of dimmers, and sometimes what you're buying is a number of control channels, and sometimes it's a number of moving light things or whatever. And you just need to make sure you're comparing apples with apples when you look at the numbers.
Exactly. You know, I've seen it come across a couple of different times or different places where somebody wants to control 20 lights. Well, is that 20 lights 20 dimmers, or is that 20 moving lights?
There's
multiple options here.
Or is it 20? It's not 20 lights even. It's, you know, each light takes up 10 DMX slots. So actually it's 200 DMX slots or whatever the number is.
Exactly.
Some manufacturers do it in the number of DMX slots. You know, and as long as you know what their numbers mean, and as long as you compare like with like, and you buy enough to do what you need to do, it doesn't matter. Or you pick a console where you can expand it later if you have to.
Yeah, I think that leads in, you know, not only looking at your current size of the rig, I think you also have to take into consideration your future plans for your rig.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's two parts of that. I mean, jumping around a little bit, but the other part is what's in your rig. Because if you just have 20 lights, 20 dimmers, you know, that's a relatively easy thing to control. If you add 10 moving lights, then suddenly it's a different set of control issues. Suddenly you can't just control it with 20 faders because the lights do more complicated things. You need to have control of those as well. So you need to look at what you have now, and you need to look at what you might have in the future. And the future includes all these fantastic new toys that people are giving us to play with, which is the moving lights, and maybe it's the LED lights of the various kinds, and maybe it's media servers and all that kind of stuff, and color changes and all those things. That it's interesting because a few years ago, if you could go to a small theater and you could say, all this technology exists, but you'll never be able to use it. And it's all actually now becoming really affordable. And the interesting change that's happening is for a small theater, LED technology, for example, is potentially really interesting because it's low power and it's low heat output and all that kind of, and it's low running costs, hopefully. So there's some venues in London, the Arcola in London, which is trying to be the first sustainable theater, and they're very big on LEDs because it fits in with their remit of using less power. But LEDs can be a pain to control because you suddenly, it's a different thing. Suddenly you have to deal with lots of color mixing things, or a baton might have lots of channels to deal with being able to split it up into little subsections. So again, you just need to look and say, if we're going to do this, we're aware of suddenly we might need 50 DMX slots for a light instead of one DMX slot for a dimmer, and making sure you deal with the number of things you need for that.
Exactly.
It all comes down to numbers and knowing roughly what you're going to need.
Well, yeah, you've got to do your math beforehand. You just can't come in and say, I want a console that will control 20 channels. Okay,
yeah.
20 channels. 20 channels, again, of what? You know, come back and let's talk about what your rig is, like you've been saying.
Yeah. And again, it also then expands slightly from that to not only what your rig is, but what you're actually going to try and do with it. Because if you're a venue where an act walks in at 5 o'clock and at 6 o'clock you have to be doing a show live in front of an audience, you need the ability to just grab lights and, you know, make them do things quickly, particularly if you're like a concert venue. If you're a theatre venue, you might have a bit more time and it might be a bit more structured and you need less kind of hands-on control and you need more ability to program structured cues. Or maybe a venue you do everything and you never know what's going to come in the door from day to day. And then you kind of need a console that gives you the best of all of those worlds.
Exactly.
And that's hard. And I have to say, an interesting thing that that struck me recently is that consoles used to be really, really expensive. And consoles are now much less expensive. relatively less expensive. But what tends to happen is the budget people go, well, we'll give you less money to spend on a product then. Mm-hmm. And you have to buy the one product that does everything. And I'm just beginning to wonder if actually you could take the money and split it and say, well, we'll buy console type A and we'll use that if we do a theatre show, and we'll buy console type B and we'll use that if we do live busking type shows. So I was in Dallas recently and I discovered they own, I think, EOSes or EOSi or whatever multiple EOS are called.
EOSes
that they use to run their theatre shows. But they also have a Jans Vista sitting in the back of the room for when they do more kind of live event, music events.
Okay.
Now, I don't think they've actually used the Vista yet, for example, but, you know, it's somebody's, that's the route somebody's taken to solving their particular problem.
Okay.
Which is an interesting approach. What did we get to?
All right. I think that pretty much covers that portion, you know, looking at your numbers, and then that will determine, you know, what range of consoles you might be in. But starting there, we got to next look at, do you want portable or fixed placed? You know, is your console going to be on tour? Is it going to be in a dedicated place? What's going to happen with this desk? So what kind of options do we have here, do you think?
Yeah, and also it's not just about a dedicated place in terms of one building, but it's whether it's going to be in a control room or whether you want to grab it and take it somewhere else.
Like a tech table or?
Tech table or in the auditorium. Or if you're in a kind of multi-venue building where you need to move it from venue to venue at different times or whatever, you know. And again, it then becomes about whether it's you and you need to pick it up and carry it, or whether it's you and a crew of three need to pick it up and carry it. You know, physically, is it a big desk or a little desk? You know, in some venues, crazy things like, can you actually get it through the door without tipping it on its side and knocking the displays off and that kind of thing.
Okay.
It's interesting. One of the things I first commented on when I first saw the EOS is the fact that you can't adjust the angle of the screens, which to one extent is a problem when you're actually running the console, but also just sometimes getting it out of awkward control rooms is much harder.
Yeah, you've got to tip that SOB.
You have to make sure you don't break the top of it off.
Yeah.
Because that's probably not covered by the warranty, I'm guessing.
No, I don't think it is, unfortunately.
You know, and then where you can then take that to now is there are a number of people making very good lighting control products, which are actually just software that runs on a PC or a Mac or whatever.
Yeah, that's where I was going to head into next. You know, like you're saying.
Yeah, it kind of becomes part of the same question, because if you say, well, I can just run the whole thing off my laptop, then laptops are designed to be carried around. You know, suddenly you've got an incredibly easy, incredible portable thing you can take anywhere.
Exactly.
The scary thing then is you also have a thing that's not just a lighting desk, and if you have like an opportunist thief just walking through the building, they're probably not going to steal an ETC ion because they probably don't know what it is.
Yeah,
but your shiny new MacBook is going to walk out the door straight away, you know.
Yeah, say goodbye to that lighting controller.
So you need to think about some way of locking it down and all that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, not only do you have your PC base, so you have a dedicated desk, you know, something that actually looks like a desk is a desk, and then the PC base. But what about the networking? You know, you can, since we're on the ETC talking about their stuff, you know, we're not necessarily pushing them. We're just using them as an example, I think.
No. Yeah.
You know, not only can you use a regular desk like an EOS, an Ion, or an Element, but the networking aspect, using a PC as a client of the console, you know, that
Yeah, and I have to say, that's one of the most remarkable things that's come about in the last 10 years or so, is the ability to network things together so you can have multiple control points, mm-hmm. and B, to not need full consoles to do that. So you can just hang a PC or a Mac or whatever with whatever dongle or software you need to do it off the end of it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think, again, that becomes the, I think there will become a crossover point when a venue becomes big enough to start thinking about that. Again, I think if you're a school with 20 dimmers or 40 dimmers, you probably don't need networking or any of that stuff.
Yeah.
I think we'll come on to it at the end, because I think it's interesting is that we are clearly moving to a networked future. Mm-hmm. You know, I think eventually ACN will sweep the world and deliver on its promise and be a fantastic, fantastic thing. But it's not quite there yet. So if you'll just have a desk and some dimmers, probably you want a piece of DMX cable between the two. I know it makes me sound like a Luddite, but it's reliable and it's relatively inexpensive and it kind of works, you know.
Yeah, it's as simple as plug and play almost.
Simplest plug and play that we've spent 20 years proving how to make work. Mm-hmm. But if you can step, if you're just that little bit bigger and you start to have the ability to need some of that functionality, it becomes incredibly useful because it means that you can put a console in the control room where it's safe and it's ergonomic and it's comfortable to use and all that, and you can lock it up. Mm-hmm. But if you need to run around the building just checking stuff, you can take your laptop. Or if the lighting designer needs to sit at a tech table and see what you're doing or see channel levels, they can just do that on their laptop. We started doing that a decade ago with the Strand consoles in various sort of cheaty ways. And now it's just become commonplace. And I have to say, it's brilliant.
I think it's fantastic as well.
And particularly since quite often they're not charging you any money for it. You know,
in certain
else you
aspects,
kind of get
yeah.
free and, you know, you get some version of the functionality probably for not very much money.
Mm-hmm.
And when you then extend that and you start saying, well, then while we've got the network, we can run this remote using handheld remotes or using our iPhones or using some little portable access device.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact we've always been able to do it wirelessly, but it's tended not to be very reliable until recently. And the fact that now it's becoming reliable, and the battery actually lasts long enough to be useful during a focus session, you know, which didn't used to be the case. And it's now becoming the case you can have more than one remote. So again, potentially you could change the model of, instead of having one poor person stuck on the console just turning lights off on and off while three other people run around focusing, each of them could have a little remote and mm-hmm. they could just turn things on and off themselves as they do it.
Yeah, instead of yelling up to the booth or overhead.
Yeah, all that
something.
Yelling goes away. You know,
exactly.
That yelling just drives me crazy because we're always trying to do it while they're finishing building the set and there are power tools going and all of that. Anything you can do to avoid the yelling in my book is a good thing.
Precisely, yeah.
And again, you know, that's comes in from kind of the mid-level consoles. But if you're equipping a building, it might be a good reason to say, wow, even if we're small on the number of dimmers, that kind of extra functionality becomes a useful tool, might be a useful tool to us.
So that's definitely something to consider then, if depending on your console choice or, you know, your, I don't want to say abilities, but your requirements.
You need to do, yeah.
Yeah, it's something to consider.
You know, and the requirements change from a scale of venue, because if you're a big venue with lots of people running around, that might be useful. But conversely, if you're a small venue and it's just you, having to turn the lights on and focus, go to the grid and focus the lights and da-da-da-da-da, being able to turn things on and off yourself wherever you are
mm-hmm.
is just completely invaluable, you know, because otherwise you just go crazy running backwards and forwards. And a little tiny desk, you know, the smart fade, I'm guessing, I haven't looked, I might be wrong, but I'm guessing it doesn't have a remote option.
Unfortunately, no, it doesn't.
So, you know, you're stuck with having to have somebody there turning things on and off.
But again, you're talking about some place that only has 20, 30, maybe 40 dimmers at most.
Yeah.
So do they really need that ability?
Yeah, but it's just to be aware that the little baby desk won't do it. And mm-hmm. the next one up, which might be the Element, say, which is the smallest of the EOS range,
mm-hmm.
probably can do it. Maybe that's worth factoring in.
Certainly, you know, certainly.
Because ultimately, there are no right answers. It's whatever works for you. But that would be on my list of hints of things to look at.
Sure.
What's next?
Moving lights versus just dimmers, you know, LEDs, video. These are all things to consider when looking at your desk, right?
Absolutely.
You know, using the ETC again as our example, are you going to run moving lights off a smart fade? On the smart fade moving light or ML? Yeah, you can. But in that example, you're limited to 24. And only, I think it's 48 dimmers.
Yep.
You know, there's not much room for growth after there if you're planning on moving up, adding more fixtures, more LEDs, anything. That particular console may not be the right choice for you. That's when you might have to start looking at the next version going into the Element, the Ion. And if, you know, you have the abilities, the EOS lineup, but...
Again, what's remarkable is that 10 years ago, if you'd gone to a mid-size venue and said, moving lights, one day you will be able to afford moving lights, they'd have laughed at you. And now they're everywhere.
Well, yeah, because there's just so many out there.
And... So many out there. They've become cheap. They've become cheaper. They've become reliable. People have started figuring out how to take advantage of them so that they're more expensive, but you might spend less time rigging and focusing and all that stuff. know, so ultimately it maybe ends up costing you less in the long run. But then this is where it starts to become important to figure out what you are going to do with the lights and what you need to do with them. Partly it's how many, but also it's partly if you just want a console where you can press a button and they do like quick chases, insta chase, whatever you want to call it, because that's just what you need to do. You need to pick a desk that will do that, and you need to make sure it will do that kind of thing well and let you get at things quickly. If you're doing a, if you're in a venue that's structured theatre shows, probably that's the thing you do least often. Probably most of the time you want to do, you care about really precise positioning of the lights and storing it into cues and storing the positions into presets and structuring your show and making a show that runs from Q1 to Q500 or whatever.
And that's where you're going to be looking at your mid-level consoles and above.
Well, and I think what's interesting, I mean, in terms of the number of lights, yes, but I think the other thing that's interesting is that there's a lot of people who split out, they try and classify the consoles. And the split used to be you had moving light desks or conventional light desks. And then things kind of merged together a bit. And so now people sort of don't talk about that so much, but they start saying, well, this is a rock and roll desk or this is a theatre desk. So if you look at the Grandma, for example, versus the EOS, it's not true, but a lot of people will say the Grandma is a rock and roll desk and the EOS is a theatre desk. Both of them would like to cross over into the other's market because then they'd sell more consoles, obviously. And MA with the MA2, quite a lot of the plan of the MA2, I think, is to take on board a lot of the theatre type things that all of us crazy theatre people have been asking for. That they've spent a long time with the Grandma One going, ah, oh, well, you're all crazy. Why would you ever want to do it like this? And now they're beginning to go, oh, okay, well, we see the advantage of that. Split to me quite often seems that it's actually between consoles that are great for shows that you do once or twice. So, you know, a live event or a conference or a party or something. So you need to get stuff up and running and flashing and trashing quickly, but you don't necessarily care about managing the information and the detail in the long run. And then on the other hand, there are desks where what you care about is the long run of a very structured show. And so what you care about there is being able to set the cues precisely, being able to work with a lighting designer, being able to share the information with them, being able to patch the rig maybe without having to type the whole patch in again, because maybe somebody's already done it in Lightrite or another tool, and it would make sense just to import it rather than, you know, be a number cruncher all over again.
Sure.
Tools so that when you finish, the, you know, tools to make let you make changes to the show in strange, quirky ways that theatre people do. So, like, we need to add a conductor light through all 400 cues. Things to deal with, the things that we get asked for all the time that some consoles make really hard, like you're in the middle of teching the show and the cleaner comes in and says, I need to vacuum the auditorium, can you just put the house lights at a low level? And you want to do that, but you don't want to accidentally record it into every cue you then plot for the next hour while they're doing that. And at the back end of the show, to answer questions like, which lights did we actually use and which colours have we actually used in our scrollers and those kind of things. And lots of desks are very bad at giving you that information. And if you're doing a show that lasts one night or two nights, you might not care about any of that. But there will come a point, or you'll be doing a particular style of show, and usually this is theatre shows, where that information becomes really important to you. And that ability to kind of hold something while working on something else, while dealing with an electrician fixing something else, becomes really important to you. And again, different consoles on every scale deal with those kind of problems in different ways. And some do it better and some do it worse. And on all of them, you will be able to learn some convoluted trick to let you do what you need to do. But that's the thing where it's actually better in the demo to sit there and watch the manufacturer go, you can do this and you can do this and you can do this and you can make these lights wiggle around and then this will happen and da-da-da-da-da. And then you just start asking really obvious questions like, how do I put the house lights on a submaster quickly? How do I do that so that I don't, it doesn't then record into cues when I press record? How do I, you know, obvious things that seem obvious when you think about the things you actually do day in, day out. But which a lot of consoles, it's actually really hard to do. And a lot of console manufacturers don't consider, because if you're sitting in a room playing with your console on WYSIWYG or whatever, not in the real world, you never encounter these problems because nobody's going to come in and ask you to turn on WYSIWYG's virtual vacuuming lights. You know?
but you know, this is something that these are all great points, of course, you know, getting more details about the console, you know, can it do this? Can you do this? And I don't want to say that you're not going to know these questions when you start off. That's why we're doing this, you know, answer these type of questions, you know, start thinking about how you're
the next time you're sitting in the theater for the day is to just remember all the crazy things that somebody's asked you to do.
I need stage right on for just a minute.
Yeah.
And just, you're in the middle of programming. How do you do that?
Absolutely. How do you do that? But it's just to not just do it, but also when you're thinking about buying a new console, is to kind of file them away gently so they can go on your list of awkward questions you need to ask when somebody's showing you a console. Because quite often the simplest questions are the ones that actually throw people the most, I found.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly at trade shows, because they don't get asked those questions. At trade shows, people always say, how do I do this super fancy thing? People very rarely say, how do I just record Q1? How do I edit Q1? Or the other thing is that at a trade show, somebody will always make 6 cues really quickly, and then something weird will happen, and they'll just delete all those cues, and they'll start again. And in a real show, it's very rare that you can turn to a lighting designer and say, oh, I'm sorry, I've made a mistake. I just need to delete all the cues and start again. You know, so it's understanding how the console lets you edit things and change things and deal with big ranges of cues without messing up other bits of the show.
Well, speaking of trade shows, you know, doing the demos at trade shows, you know, don't be afraid. I'm not afraid, certainly, to get in there and try and start programming, you know, and finding these problems where I need to redo those or fix those 6 cues, like you're saying. You know, manufacturers or console manufacturers don't have a problem with people jumping on the console. That's how you find these questions, I think.
Yeah, also, and that's how they should make the console better, because they should go, why are you asking me to, you know, what's this crazy thing you're asking my console to do? Why? And then they should go, well, why are you asking it to do that? And then they should go, oh, okay, yeah, I understand that, you know, let me go away and see if we can put it on the list for version 1.7.3.2 or whatever's, you know, due out next.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, slightly aside from the nitty-gritty of the console, but what's interesting to me is how few of the people who actually make consoles now, who are actually in charge of them, actually go out and use them on shows, you know. And because they're never in that crazy melting pot time pressure real world thing, it's quite hard for them to know what some of those crazy requests actually are.
And I don't want to say that I don't want people to go away thinking that manufacturers don't listen to people. I actually think quite a few manufacturers, I guess I'm thinking that, or have the totally different opinion than you do of manufacturers, some manufacturers at least.
Yeah.
You know, I think there are quite a few out there that actually listen to what we're saying about the console, you know.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I think they all listen. It's just some of them do it from the point of view of actually doing shows,
before
and some of them do
it
from the point of view of just being people who make consoles.
Yeah.
And that's just slightly different, I think, because until you understand the pressure of being in a room with somebody yelling at you and somebody yelling at them and 6 other people yelling at each other about something entirely unrelated,
mm-hmm.
and you know you've got to have a show at 7:30 that night, you know, that's a completely surreal kind of pressure that I don't think exists in any other walk of life.
True.
And it's just to have the tools that let you be able to deal with that calmly and methodically without messing up the show, because ultimately at the end of the day, what you're trying to do is capture the cues you're trying to make and make sure you don't mess them up.
And then, of course, it looks pretty on stage.
It looks pretty on stage, but then to not mess that up is the important thing.
Mess it up.
And, you know, so you need tools to do that. You need the console that you can be comfortable with to let you do that. And you just need to make sure that if it's not doing something that you need it to do, that you tell somebody who can do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
So that hopefully they can then go and make it better. And they're pretty good at making them better. You know, the other thing that's changed over time is because they're all now just software, they mm-hmm. just keep improving.
Yeah, that's the beauty part about most of the modern consoles these days is they're all base. You know, if you look at a console, it looks like a lighting console from back in the day. But if you look at the back, what's it look like? A PC. Because that's what it is. It's almost all consoles these days are just big fancy computers with crazy keyboards, and it's all software updates.
Yeah. So, yeah, and so the other thing to look at when you're choosing is to kind of sample around your manufacturers and say, how often does a new software thing come up?
Exactly, yep. You know, has somebody got it right and they're only doing it every 6 months, or is somebody doing it like every other week?
Yeah, you know, and again, you'll get different perspectives from the manufacturers, because some will say, well, every time we fix something, we give you a new software version. Mm-hmm. So you get a new one every week. And some will say, well, every time we fix some stuff, we then spend a long time testing it to make sure we haven't broken everything. So we give it to you every 6 months once we've tested it. Mm-hmm. And again, both are valid, but it's kind of how much risk you want to take, because ultimately it's you in front of an audience. You know, I always say that being the guy running the console, the girl, the person running the console, is like being the pilot on an airplane, because mm-hmm. you're the one who's ultimately in charge of everything that's going to happen. You know, and the mechanics will have fixed the engines and the electricians will have made the lights work in our world, but you're the one who actually has to be responsible for delivering the lighting to 200 or 500 or 1,000 people.
That's a good point. I like that analogy there. You're the pilot.
It's ultimately down to you, you know, and so you have to be the one who's done the rig check to make sure the lights work and all that stuff. And so if you're comfortable running on some beta software version that's only come out today and you don't quite know what's going to be broken in it, mm-hmm. great. Or if you're in an environment where you can do that because it's when you're rehearsing a show, so there is no audience, great. But, you know, I'm pretty sure if I was doing a big first night of some big glamorous show, I would want a piece of software that I'd been using for a few weeks and knew it wasn't going to break.
Yep.
Wasn't going to crash and wasn't going to wig out in some weird way, because otherwise I'm the one who's going to be standing in front of an audience going, oh, very sorry. The lighting desk somehow broken because I was trying the beta software of something new. So, you know, it depends how brave you are.
Exactly. Yep.
You know, I mean, a point from that again is things to consider is if you want a console that you can add some kind of backup to.
Meaning because, a backup console, backup
software?
Well,
a backup system in some way. You know, it might be a full backup console. Mm-hmm. You might want it so that if your console crashes, because they are just computers and computers always crash at some point. I mean, that's the way of life now. Do you want another one sitting there that just goes, oh, okay, that one's crashed, I'll just take over, yep. and hopefully nobody notices? That's a fantastic facility, but it's some more money, you know.
Yeah, it's all part of the process, you know, being safe, yeah. or being, I won't say safe, but mindful of your show. You know,
yeah.
like you're saying, computers do crash.
Yeah.
What's going to happen if you do lose that console?
Yeah, or is it good enough that you can, you know, if you're using some kind of PC-based one, mm-hmm. you can say, well, hang on for 5 minutes. I've got another one in another room that's set up with the software. I'll go get that, plug it in, and we'll carry on. But maybe that's not acceptable to your audience.
No, I don't think that's acceptable, period.
Probably not. So, you know, but again, it becomes at some point you will probably have to talk to your management, your accountants, and say, we can buy this and it will cost X $1,000, and we can buy this backup system and it will cost Y $1,000, and you're going to sigh deeply about the fact we're spending this extra money. But at some point, when we have to refund all the ticket money because we have to cancel a show, you're going to wish you'd spent that money.
That's also something that you got to consider when you're going to actually purchase this, when you've got to talk to people, is, like you're saying, do we want to spend this extra, we'll say $1,000 to... Yeah.
To make sure we're safe.
Yeah, to make sure we're safe. We don't lose our shows. We don't have to give up a night's worth of revenue from ticket intake.
Yeah.
You know, that $1,000 could save you $3,000 in tickets one night. Just
pretty
all
quickly,
things
you'll wish you'd bought the backup.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or you'll wish, I mean, at a simpler level, you will wish you'd bought the uninterruptible power supply or something, you know.
Yeah, that's also something very, very important to consider. You know, I don't think a backup UPS power supply is something that's going to persuade my purchase of a console, because there are consoles that do have UPS built into them. But how hard is it to go to a computer store and purchase, you know, an additional $200-$300 battery backup?
Yeah, and the interesting thing about those is quite often it's not actually the thing that the reason we started using them is because consoles started taking such a long time to turn on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because in the old days you'd turn on your Arium or whatever, ETC Express, whatever it was called there, and 4 seconds later you'd be ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And now you turn on a lighting console, and first of all it has to wake up, and then it has to become a PC, and then it has to think about it for a bit, and then it has to become a lighting console.
Remember, it's a PC.
It's a PC at heart, and that can be 2 minutes of time gone. Mm-hmm. So if you just have a thing where the power just dips out and the computer restarts, suddenly you're there going with an audience going, oh, I'm sorry, hang on a minute, and I'll catch up with you. The UPS would at least save you from that, because the machine would just have kept going.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, again, part of what you need to do when you buy the lighting desk is you need to make sure you know what happens in that situation. So when your console goes off, do all your dimmers go off? Or do they all say, oh, the console's gone off, we'll just stay here for a minute until it comes back? You know, it's
That's all something that you can, in most advanced dimmers these days, that's something I think that can be programmed into the rack. So
absolutely. But you just need to know before it happens to you in a show.
Exactly, yep.
What's going to happen? You know, it's a bit beyond the topic of buying the desk. But again, if you make a big ticket purchase and the manufacturer is going to come in and help you set it up or train you or whatever, you just need to make sure that as part of that, you understand how it interacts with your system properly.
Exactly.
I think.
Yeah, because you don't want to have a blackout, an unwanted blackout, we'll say.
No, or for example, so if the console goes off and comes on again, does it come back in the last queue state or does it come back with all the lights at zero?
Mm-hmm.
Because then even if your dimmers have held the lights on, they're all going to go out when the console wakes up again. It's just it's that kind of knowing how the machine works. And again, that would be one of the questions to ask at the trade show. Because in some consoles, you get an option and you get to choose. And in some consoles, you don't. And it's just knowing what's going to happen and whether it works with the way your venue needs to work, I think.
Okay. So what are some of the other options? What are some of the other things that we need to consider when looking at buying a new desk?
Well, from the hardware, I mean, I think there's two parts. There's hardware and then there's the human interface to the hardware. So maybe the hardware first would be things like what physical controls do you need to control your lights? Because we talked about the PC option. So you could have a PC and a mouse and a QWERTY keyboard, but trust me, that's a really bad interface for actually trying to control lights quickly.
Never been a fan.
Have tried it on occasion. Not good. You can do it, and it's great for kind of wandering around the theater bringing up lights, but it's not good for actually just trying to get stuff done quickly. So then you say, well, okay, we need some kind of keyboard and we need some kind of interface. And the interface might be, in the olden days, it would have been a bunch of faders, because if you just have lights, faders are actually a really good interface for just bringing lights up and down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're completely intuitive. They're completely obvious. You know, they're easy for anyone to do, even if somebody's coming in and they're not really a lighting person and they just need to turn some lights on. It's kind of clear how you do it.
Yeah, because almost anybody has operated a rheostat dimmer in your house. You know,
yeah. You
want to turn on your dining room to 50%. Oh, well, that means I have to slide that thing to 50% or halfway between its marks.
Yeah.
Easy.
You know, and now that some consoles add the tricks like motorizing the faders so that as you record cues and playback cues, you don't end up with the faders stuck in positions that become meaningless.
Yeah, but now with motorized faders, you know, we're talking a little bit higher end dollar there.
You know, but if you're just using faders and you never record cues, that doesn't matter because you will just keep playing your show as you go. And you know, and I have to say, running a show manually is becoming a lost art, and yet it's so rewarding. You know, to actually play back cues by putting your 10 fingers on 10 faders and moving them slowly or in time or whatever is just fantastic. And everyone should, even if they end up not using consoles like that, everybody at some point should try it because it actually connects you to the lighting, you know, in a way that you're not connected to the lighting with a keyboard. You know, in the same way, you will never watch somebody mixing the sound on a show with a keyboard and a mouse.
Nope.
They'll have their hands on the faders, and that's because sound people always seem to me to be much more connected to what's happening on the stage than lighting people quite often are now.
Well, because we're used to,
in theatrical environments, we've become used to being, programmers, and then it becomes you press go when somebody tells you to, and in some ways that's really sad. So in terms of control, you can start off with faders, and you can say, well, they're great or not. Do they work with the way we need it to work? Moving lights, you can say, well, okay, how do I control my lights? And we've now ended up generally with some kind of rotary encoders for controlling stuff. You know, that works fine. Then you can look and say, well, how many do I need? Do I just need two, pan and tilt? If I'm doing moving lights with framing shutters, having lots of encoders suddenly becomes really useful.
Yeah, I think it's all based on how many encoders you feel comfortable with. You know, you're certainly limited by what the manufacturer gives you, but there's two, there's options of four and then six, you know, where pin, tilt, or dedicate.
I mean, and or then beyond that, I think, for example, there seems to be a huge split in the world between people who like doing pan and tilt using two encoders and people who like using pan and tilt on a trackball. Mm. I happen to like the trackball because you can do that with one hand and your other hand can continue doing something else on the desk. Some consoles don't give you the choice to do that. Some didn't used to, but now do, you know. And again, it's like how you're comfortable working or to have the option. So if there's lots of people working with the console, each one can choose the way they prefer to work. So that's important. And then it's like how you then interface with everything else that's going on in the console. And the solution that everyone seems to have adopted increasingly, particularly as you move up the price range, is touchscreens of some kind. Mm-hmm. And that's because they give you an infinite number of buttons, effectively.
Yeah, because you can quickly change screens and, you know, your screen layout is not determined by your keypad. It's determined by how it's designed. You know, you can have multiple pages that look totally different from each other.
Or well, it's not just that. It's that everyone went, well, we need 10 preset focus position things for our moving lights. No, well, now we need 20, or now we need 50, or now we've run out of buttons.
Yep.
What do we do? Okay, well, if we have this touchscreen, we can just keep adding more.
And make them do multiple things.
Yeah, you know, and I have to say, at the moment, I think we're in a slightly weird in-between phase because touchscreens, I think, as an interface for lighting control, in my personal opinion, are lousy. Because you have to look at them to work them. And my thing about, if I have a console with a keyboard, I can touch type on it. If I have a console with a touch screen, I have to look down, find the button, press the button, look back up, see that I've made the mistake, and fix it. So I'm always the second person after the lighting designer to know that I've messed up. Not that I ever mess up, obviously. Because we're all perfect. But what I think is going to happen in the future, if you look at the iPhone and the forthcoming iPad and all those things, putting the world of multi-touch into lighting control suddenly opens really interesting possibilities.
Well, it's funny you say that because somebody's already done it. And I think I know who you're talking. You know who I'm talking about.
Well, the Grandma 2 has it, but I don't. I mean, I keep using the Grandma 2 in Grandma 1 mode, so I haven't really experimented with what that touchscreen does yet.
I've played with the Grandma 2 in Series 2 mode, and there's really only two functions right now. At the current state, you know, of this recording, and hopefully it'll change soon, but with RGB, CMY, and HSV values, you can. Like a piano, but you can take your three fingers and mix each one individually at the same time.
Yeah.
There's also framing shutters. If your fixture has framing shutters, well, moving light has framing shutters, motorized mode shutters.
Yeah, you can just grab them and adjust them.
Yeah, you can use two fingers like you do resizing on an iPhone. You can quickly resize, bring it in, bring it out, rotate the whole thing. There's definitely a lot more ideas that I think MA has for that touchscreen.
But if you could merge that with a WYSIWYG-y kind of thing, you know, if you could actually start reaching out and touching your lights almost and doing it more than one light at a time, then suddenly that becomes a creative thing again. Because, and again, this is a bigger topic than things you should look for on the consoles, but I have an increasing bugbear with lighting desks that is that they're becoming computers that control lighting. You know, so it's like you're looking at a screen full of numbers, and it's like you could be, it's like having an Excel spreadsheet about your lighting state.
So you want to live in the 3D world in light, huh?
I don't even know if it's the 3D world. It's just the actual interactive world where I'm somehow, like if you look at most shows done on theatrical style consoles, you know, admittedly, and you look at most cues, almost every light is plotted at a level that's a multiple of 10% because it's easier to type 1 at 10.
Yeah.
Than it is just to reach out and do some stuff to it. And it's a real shame that everyone's got out of the habit of just reaching out and messing with the lights. And if, you know, if I could have a multi-touch display where I could have, like, again, like virtual faders or whatever, and but they could rearrange themselves to what I was trying to do at any given moment, and I could just reach out and adjust my state, I think that becomes a much more fluidly artistic way of creating what is actually an artistic picture on stage than going 1 at 50, 2 at 50, 3 at 50, you know. And I know we can do that with faders at the moment, but a lot of desks have taken that away because they've given us all these other interfaces instead. you know, like, and so at the moment we're in the weird point because a lot of older consoles have older fashioned touchscreens that let you press one thing at a time. And so if you sometimes on some of them, if you just want to reach out and mix color, you can't because you have to select a color and select a color and select a color, you know. And again, that's another thing that a well-presented trade show presentation will just gloss over. You know, somebody will go, and if you just do this and this and this and this, then this will happen.
Well, just like,
and it's up to you to go, yes, but how about if I do this?
Well, I don't want to knock the trade show manufacturers' trade shows, but it's just like a show. It's a well-rehearsed show.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and that's the thing. You have to remember they've been rehearsing that little presentation probably for many other trade shows.
Or they've done it multiple times where it just becomes.
Yeah, yeah. And they do it, you know, I'm not knocking for them. They do it brilliantly, but just it's like buyer beware.
Exactly.
You know? So, and again, on the consoles, you can now, the Grandma 2 range, for example, you can say, well, we'll buy the little baby one and it has a screen that's not a touch screen, or we can buy the mid one that has one touch screen, or we can buy the big one that has two or three, depending on how huge a budget you've got.
Yeah, it's all in your price range. You know, if you're certain on, we'll go to Grandma 2 now as an example. If you want to go with the Grandma 2, I love that architecture, I want to use that. Okay, well, right now there's those three options.
Yeah.
Do you want to spend X amount of dollars and get the big full-size three touchscreens, two monitors, and all that jazz? Or can you live with just one touchscreen, only 15 sliders that aren't motorized? You know, it's something also can be considered.
But it's also the other thing to bear in mind is things like, for example, I know a lot of people don't like them, and I happen to like them a lot, is the button overlay modules they have for the EOS touchscreens.
Yeah, I figured that'd be a huge point with you since you don't like the LCD touch.
Well, but it just means that you can bump through things without looking at without having to keep looking away from the stage.
And I think it was a genius move by ETC to add that into the EOS or the EOS desk.
Yeah.
Do you want tactile?
Yeah, and lots of people you get a choice, and having a choice I think is really important.
Yeah.
You know, again, just to look at that. Or, you know, also to look at the options that let you add things. So the Ion and the small grandmas, you can buy them without a touchscreen. And then later on, when you get some more money, you can buy an external touchscreen.
Certainly, yeah.
Plug it in, and hopefully it'll all just magically work.
Yeah, like if...
So you gain that functionality back.
Yeah, if you start off buying any mid-level, like an Ion or... I can't think of one off the top of my head. The Orb, you know, if you buy if you buy one of those desks and you only have enough money for two, you know, 17-inch LCD screens, fine. Yeah. Next year I get $1,000. Hey, let's add a touchscreen. Yeah. Next year we can add another one. That's, I think, a genius point on these consoles is you can upgrade them yourself when the funds become available, or you just have the ability to.
Yeah, no, you know, and that's clever on the part of all of them. It now is to tap into this massive range of hardware that exists that's nothing to do with the lighting industry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, touchscreens weren't invented for us, but we're happy to say, well, if it's there and it will work, then sure, great, why not?
I'm a huge fan of multi-touch or touch at all, touchscreens at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's going to become interesting is there's a number of people making lighting console type products for the iPhone that I've always been kind of skeptical about. I mean, they're great for testing things, but in the real world, it's not a very good interface because it's a little teeny tiny phone.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that some of that will suddenly work on the iPad and will then be made better for the iPad, I think is going to be a really interesting thing to watch over the next few months.
I'm hugely excited about this. I can't wait to see what people come up with for the iPad.
No, and what's interesting is Richard Pilbrow years ago has a sketch of his ultimate lighting designer's tool, which is basically a big touchscreen that you can put stuff on and move it around with your fingers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this drawing he's had 20 years old now, maybe, and suddenly there's this device, and you look at it with that in mind, and you go, well, here it is. Here's the basis of it. Now we just need to get somebody to go out and write the software to let us do this, and we'll have the Richard Pilbrow dream lighting console 20 years after he first asked for it. So hopefully somebody out there will go, yes, 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 that's my challenge, and get on with it.
Perfect.
I mean, an interesting point to come out of that, because we've talked about ETC and we've talked about MA, and you know, and then we've just said, well, the Orb, which is the 0H8 console that we both independently have looked at and quite like, I think.
I think it's a fantastic board. I think
it has a lot of stuff in it for not very much money, mm-hmm. you know, and in quite nice hardware.
I'm a huge control console connoisseur. You know, I love all kinds of control. I don't want to say I'm a control freak because I'm not, but I'm a freak about control. So
yeah,
I love any control.
But the two things to consider from the kind of human side of all of that is, well, there's three things actually. There's a lot of people making consoles, but you can't necessarily always just pick one in isolation because mm-hmm. it might be that your venue receives shows from other theaters and they're going to turn up not with a console, but with it used to be a disc, but a USB stick now or whatever.
Yep.
And you just want to load, they just want to load their show into your console and do it. If they, last week they had an EOS and this week they had an Ion, then fine, you're good to go. Mm-hmm. If last week they had a Congo and this week you have an Orb, then
there might be an issue.
A little bit tougher.
Yeah.
And again, that might not be an issue for your venue and the way it works and the kind of shows it gets. But if you can service that, or if you have a console that has the ability to actually import different kinds of show files, or at a base level can import some common format, like the old ASCII queue format, mm-hmm. maybe you can at least get some of the show in and get going more quickly.
Yeah.
So that's a consideration.
And a lot of manufacturers have actually adopted ASCII into their import function, which is nice.
It is nice. You know, what we actually need is a modern standard, because ASCII doesn't deal very well with the stuff that got invented since it was made, because it's a 20-year-old standard now. You know?
Yeah.
So it has no understanding of moving lights. It has no understanding of all this kind of timing per parameter type stuff that we now have, because it doesn't really know what parameters are. Mm-hmm. And so almost everyone deals with that in a slightly different way that then means that the next console doesn't really import it very well, which means it's not actually really a standard at all anymore. Because in some ways, it's if you sit down and you know you can't import your show, then you start again. If you import your show and it kind of gets some of it, then
that's
you're in a strange position. Well, in some ways it's good, but in some ways it's worse because you don't know what's missing.
Oh, yeah.
So you actually have to go check through and find out and then fix it.
You know, speaking of the import-export functions, you know, some consoles do that, like going out of ASCII into specific manufacturer console.
Yeah.
You know, you have to use the offline editor. And most lighting desks, I think, these days offer an offline editor for free for almost certainly PC, but there are a couple that have it for Mac. And I wanted to bring up the offline editor portion because I use it all the time. Like the grandma, I don't have the money to buy a grandma 1, 2, 3, whatever right now.
Yeah.
But I wanted to learn it. So I went to...
Also, I can tell you don't want a grandma in your house because they're just way too heavy if you have to move around on your own.
good point. But I wanted to learn the console. How do I learn the console? Well, you can certainly go to MA Training or go to their website and just download the offline editor for free and start playing with it. So I think this brings up a good point when you're trying to figure out what console you've figured out what console you want. Now, how do I operate it? How do I work with it? How does it work? Easy. Go to the website, download it, read through the manual. Most times there's even a quick start video. I know a lot of the manufacturers are putting it on YouTube right now.
Yeah.
You know, simple training. This is how you bring up a channel to full. This is how you record. Great. Now I want to do it. Offline editor. Download it and start playing. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, and it's also invaluable because, of course, now, you know, in the old days, you used to quite often walk into a theater and start a show from scratch, like mm-hmm. no cues, no nothing in the console. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you add in something complicated, so that might be some moving lights or whatever, you need to have done some homework in advance. Mm-hmm. Because at the very least, you need to be able to make sure that your light's going to point somewhere sensible and you can turn it on and you have buttons for the gobos or colors or whatever.
Yeah.
And sitting and doing that in the theater is
expensive.
It's a waste of time and money.
Yeah, because you're going to have all that information beforehand. I know I'm going to have 20 moving lights and they're going to have all these gobos in these positions. Pre-program it. Get it on.
Yeah.
Get it in offline editor. Save it to your stick. So when you go into the theater, boom.
Yeah.
Into the desk, done. Let's start playing.
Plus, Plus, what will happen is you, as you start doing the shows on the same console, you'll start saying, well, I'm not going to start from scratch. I'm going to take last week's show because it was near enough the same rig. And I've got a basis to get going. And you, people who deal with rigs of mainly moving lights just have the same show or an evolving show that they just start from every time and every time, because it just saves a load of having to do the same work over and over and over again. You know, and that's another advantage for kind of having a console and sticking with it for a while, is because you can just build up your familiarity with it and also your kind of roster of useful stuff that you know how to do with it.
And of course,
and the other part of that, the human part I was going to talk about then, is the having a console that either people know or people learn.
Oh, sure.
So that if you have a pool of people around your building who know how to work console A, then that's maybe a good reason to get that console. You know?
Perfect.
Because you have a ready set of people who can just sit down and get going with it straight away.
Yeah, because you never know if you're going to come down with a cold and you can't come to the theater that night to run the show or program. Who's going to run
it? And you can always learn, you know, because all the manufacturers now do, all of them do really good training programs, whether it's they come to you or you go to them or whatever the deal ends up being. Or you do it at a trade show. It's like the LDI, the stuff that happens around LDI is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
But you, at some point, you will need a pool of people who know how to work the machine, and they won't all have had time to go to, you know, console school yet. So.
And then, of course, you know, there's the cost of it. Who can really afford to send, you know, your whole lighting staff, whether it's 1, 2, 3, 20 people?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that the number of little training videos that are appearing now is kind of an acknowledgement that, that it's better for the training to come to you than to have to schlep people around the world. You know, so I think we'll probably see more of that as well. And I wonder if we'll start to see more of the console being able to lead you, you know, in, it's like interactive help or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I've seen a couple consoles. I know the Express series, the ETC Express console, did that fantastic.
Used to tell you, used to take your hand.
You want to bring up a channel, this is how you do it. And I've seen the other consoles, some other consoles like the Element that is doing that, carried over from the EOS, or excuse me, the Express. Even the Orb was able to do that with me as well. You know, if I
press, with the little command line, the command thing at the bottom,
yeah, if I press channel, it's going to assume that I want to select either 1 through 9, or, you know, it gives me what channel numbers I want to select.
Yeah.
And I think that's...
I mean, we've been saying for a while, kind of half-jokingly, but what... I mean, because I hate it when it happens in Word, but what you want is the lighting desk with a little pop-up Leeco in the corner. It's like, hello, I see you're trying to light a show. What kind of show are you trying to light? Is it, you know, A, a drama, everything will be at 20% in cool blue. B, a musical, everything will be at full in pink or something.
Yeah.
You know, and to help you with the process of trying to set the show up. Because again, at the moment, quite often we get bogged down in just numbers and typing and numbers and scrollers and gobos, and somehow that whole process I think needs to get much better. And the machine should maybe be able to help you a little bit better to do that. I don't know who's doing it yet, but somebody should, and so somebody surely will before too long.
Good point.
I think,
well, the other thing, I think the most important thing to determine your next console purchase has to be price. You know,
ultimately, yes.
You know, I don't see a high school or a community theater spending, you know, $80,000 on a Grandma 2. Do they need it? It'll do the job.
Yeah.
But it all comes down to price point as well.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing, because without, I don't, you know, there are a lot of manufacturers now, and not just manufacturers of products, but the people who are making software lighting tools and all that stuff, making really good products. And so the thing, first thing now, is you shouldn't be afraid to just think outside the box and go look at all these products, because as we said, you can try most of them for free to some extent. And if you find that, you know, Light Factory from New Zealand is fantastic, or the Clarity from LSE in Australia is fantastic, or whatever, you know, if you download it and you go, yeah, this is the thing for me, and it's your venue and you don't have to interact with anybody else, then great, maybe that's the product for you. I think there's a certain, I don't know if obligation is the right word, but for example, if your school bought an Element and you learn how to use an Element, then when you go into the real world, you will be able to sit at an Ion or go to a bigger theatre and sit at an EOS and know how to work it. So that will be a useful skill base that you've acquired. So it's those considerations as well in terms of picking the family.
Yeah, because you don't want to pick something that nobody's using out there.
No.
If your ultimate goals are, you know, looking at the high school, college kids, if your ultimate goal is to go on Broadway, they're not really using Expresses anymore on Broadway, I think.
No.
So it's something to be aware of.
But, you know, equally, if the cost is a big factor, and there are now, as I say, there are so many options where you could buy a PC and some piece of software and it doesn't cost you anything very much, and it will do your shows for you. And if you know how to work it, and that's actually the important thing, is for you to figure out how to work it so that you can sit in front of a stage with a load of people on it waiting for you to create lighting. As long as you can work the machine, you need to find the one and try the one that suits you best within your budget.
Yeah,
and if you're in a small theater, that might now be a PC and a wing or something.
Yeah, and as time goes, you may be able to, you know, upgrade, add on to the PC base, or you may find yourself upgrading to a new console. Because again, consoles are not a constant revolution, but I'd say every 10 years, there's going to be a revolution in the lighting industry. Just like you're talking about, I want to control lights essentially in the 3D world where I pick something out and move it. Hey, you know, somebody may be listening to that and say, man, that guy Rob's got a great idea, and start working on it. 2 years later, here it is.
Yeah, it hasn't happened so far, but, you know, we can live in hope. what I do think, though, is that if you have more money, you will find that programming a show on a, I mean, as an example, I've been working with some students this week who've been using the Grandma 2 Ultralight, the one that only has one screen. And it's slow because you just can't get enough stuff there in front of you all the time. If they had the one with two screens, it would be better because, or they added a touch screen or whatever, they would be able to get more stuff there.
And
so the consideration is, if you need to work quickly, if you do shows under time pressure, it's worth you investing the money to get the tool that lets you do your job better.
Perfect.
I think.
Exactly.
Or quicker, at least.
Yeah.
And that is really worth it. And, you know, because you can look at the price difference between a Grandma, the Ultralight, and the Light, whatever it is, and I don't know what the numbers are. But I bet you go, that's a lot of money for one extra screen.
And, you know, that may be something where, if we're using that example, 2 years, you have to live with one screen. You're going to have to, you know, put in a couple extra hours each show. But
it's going to drive you crazy, more importantly.
In 2 years, you know, you may be able to upgrade and afford another touchscreen, an external touchscreen or something. You know,
even that's not quite the same. I mean, I think, you know, for example, in that transition, I'd say it would be worth skimping and scraving and saving up a bit more, because trying to do a lot of shows a lot of the time with one touchscreen, you can do it, but it would just drive you crazy. Adding an external touchscreen, that's a solution, but it's not quite ever in the right place, and it's not quite integrated properly. Having it right there's actually nothing to beat that. And that's why, you know, the real hardware costs more money, because partly it's costing the manufacturer more, but also it becomes more useful to you. It lets you do your job quicker, and ultimately, therefore, in the long run, hopefully, you're saving somebody some money. You know, whoever it is who's paying for it on your show. I mean, and the last part I'd say about all of that maybe is that you need to, the other factor is to be aware of what people around you, like rental shops, have.
Yeah.
So that it may be that if you need the bigger desk for a big show, you can rent something you're familiar with. If you break your console,
God forbid,
and you need to get a replacement, God forbid, but, you know, Coca-Cola accidents do happen, or coffee, whatever.
Hey, no coffee around my console, though.
Somebody always manages it somehow.
It's always me.
Well, we had a theater here where, I mean, a big West End theater where somebody, like, in the audience went to a restroom and left a tap on, and because it was last thing Saturday night, it was on a weekend. And the building, just all the way through, was filled up with dripping water. And the only thing that saved the lighting console, and this is another top tip, is that somebody had remembered to put the dust cover on it that night. You know, if they hadn't done that, we'd have had a soaking wet lighting console, and we'd have had to go get another one. But, you know, so make sure you get a dust cover in the price. That's clearly an important tip.
Very good idea. Well, listen, let's wrap this up here. First, you know, not only can you rent a console that you're interested in, you know, for a week you're interested in buying a Grandma 2. You can certainly rent it for a week, try it out there. What's another great alternative to that?
Offline, try it. Take advantage of the magic of the internet and just go ask people.
Yeah.
There's now so many online-y forums full of really good people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what will happen is you'll go on and you'll say, I'm thinking of buying console X, and you will get 27,000 replies of everybody. Because everybody, lots of people get passionate about their favorite console, and they will always argue for it.
And of course,
so, you know, you'll say, I need to buy a new console for my high school. And they'll say, Grandma 2 is the only answer.
And, you know, there's always the people that are flamers, you know.
Some of them are just truly passionate about the product that they love using. And that kind of loyalty, I think, is remarkable
mm-hmm.
and admirable. But sometimes it just means they kind of don't really quite read the question before going, what you need is a Grandma 2. But if you sort through all that information, you will actually find a lot of good advice of people going, well, we've used this and it's good for these reasons and bad for these reasons. And somebody else saying, well, we've used this and, you know, it has these problems and these things are good and the manufacturer was great and they answered the phone or whatever. And it's just gathering opinions from people who've actually gone out and spent the money to use it.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect manufacturers or dealers are probably quite happy. I say this in trepidation of them all hating me for saying it, but will be quite happy to lend you something to try.
Or bring something to you, yeah.
Yeah, if you're serious about spending the money.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the, you know, end-all, be-all. If you want to see almost everything at one time, trade shows. You know, it costs a little bit of money to go to a trade show wherever it is in, you know, the UK or the United States, around the world. Go to a trade show and do the demo. Get a demo, play with the console, see how it feels. You know, a slider may feel funny to you. It's something that's crazy.
Lots of people keep saying trade shows are dying out, and for exactly the reason you've said, they're not, because there is nothing to beat just in one day mm-hmm. sitting in front of 10 consoles. Because suddenly you get, you know, like, does the keyboard feel cheap and nasty? You know, or mm-hmm. does it have, like, a light-up keyboard or adjustable gooseneck lights or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
A real set of real problems that you'll suddenly encounter you will never meet until you sit down and use it. You know, is the screen too reflective so that the work light above my desk is just going to get in my eyes all the time, not let me read the screen?
Does the screen tilt?
Does the screen tilt?
You know, and I think another great point with the trade show is you see 10 consoles and somebody does something really neat, cool here. Hey, you can go back to that other manufacturer two booths away and say, hey, how do you do this?
You can do that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Not only do you learn about the console, but you can compare them really quickly by going back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, and also you can take advantage of, like, LDI. We've been doing this thing for a few years, which is, I can't remember what we call it now, but it's basically a bunch of us sit in a room and bore on about programming shows for, originally it was an hour, and it now seems to be like all show as far as I can tell, and it's great. But you get a lot of people in the room who've actually used consoles and they've come across real problems, and they start asking smart questions that then trigger off other people in the room to start saying, oh, well, blah, blah, blah. And it becomes a discussion
mm-hmm.
about a lot of people having things. And what we've done, what we did this last LDI, was we then got a bunch of consoles in the room and we just said to people, go try them.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting about that is we had manufacturers' reps there, but we, as the speakers, as the independents, if you like, all took a console each.
Mm-hmm.
And it became each one of us saying, well, how do I do this on this? You know, asking the questions that we know about, and the manufacturers going, oh, well, on our console, you do this. And then they could just move to the next console and ask the same questions. But because it was led by somebody who wasn't just the manufacturer, you know, you actually got a balance of opinions. And I think that was really good.
Perfect.
I don't know if we're doing it again this year. I hope we are, because it was fun. But, you know, that kind of event is really useful too.
Well, I'm sad I missed it last year.
Well, and I'm hoping we can get a few more consoles in, because mm-hmm. because that would be a good place to have the things like the Orb and Clarity and all those smaller consoles and software-y based things that people don't necessarily know about.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you look at consoles, if you probably type consoles into the internet, you get ETC and you get MA and you get Strand, and they're the names everybody knows. And, you know, in Europe, you used to get AVAB.
Mm-hmm.
But now anyone can sit down in their room and start writing software. And it's out, and sometimes they're not very powerful, and sometimes they're not very reliable. But sometimes you just get really interesting ideas. And to be aware of what those ideas are so that people start wanting them, I think, is incredibly useful.
And finding the perfect setup for yourself.
Yeah, you know, because the other thing about it, which we haven't really touched on, is lots of them are adjustable. Lots of them you can change setup options, and you can change the way it behaves, and you can kind of tailor it to the way you want it to work.
Mm-hmm.
rather than the console saying you have to do things in this order. And that can be, again, some manufacturers say, well, we prefer it that way because then we can teach you one way of doing it and everyone knows. And that's a valid argument. But why can't I do it this way? You know, there's a simple example is on the old days in Britain, to bring on a light at 10%, you type 1 at 1 and the light came on at 10%. Mm-hmm. And now you have to go 1 at 10 or 1 at 1 enter, and it's an extra keystroke. And that doesn't sound like much, but by the time you do it 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, 300 days a year on a show, that's actually a lot of extra keystrokes that you've just ended up doing.
Yeah.
You know, and if I can change that mode, then why wouldn't I want to do, if it's my choice to do that, why can't I do that? So, you know, mainly the thing now is just don't be afraid to shop around. Don't be afraid to try and ask questions, because there's a lot of options. And if you don't have to buy right now, there's no reason to buy at all. I mean, the other thing I thought, suddenly thought, is that if you've got a console and you love it and it does everything you need it to do,
do you really need to do it?
Do you actually need to buy a new one?
Yeah.
There are good reasons you might, like it might be that you suddenly need to deal with media servers, say. Mm. Your console might be so old and you can hear it making nasty, grungy fan noises and you know that sometime soon it's not going to turn on in the morning. Or it might be you have a place where the accounts department say every 5 years we have this money to spend and we have to spend it. You know, they're all good reasons. But if you don't have to change, if you know how to work it, you're happy using it, you love it, actually, why not just keep using it?
That's a great point. Well, listen, Rob, I think we've covered, well, I don't want to say everything, but I think we covered quite a bit, actually. I want to say thank you to you, man. I really appreciate you doing the podcast here with me, and I think we've got some great information here for you. Well, not for me, but for the listeners. Anything to leave us with?
No, I mean, apart from, and this is a personal bugbear of mine, but just keep asking the people who make the consoles for the things you need them to do, because it's only by us saying, I really needed to do this, that things actually happen. And that's how progress happens, you know. And they're pretty good at doing it, but they have to know what you want in order to go and figure out how to make it happen for you. So, yeah, just keep on at them. Because I do it all the time, and occasionally something fantastic appears on a console. So, you know, it's worth it.
Then. And in 2 years, we're going to see a 3D virtual reality where you can select a light, all because of Rob.
Hopefully, but you have to wear the 3D glasses. So you're
the 3D glasses. I forgot about that. Well, thanks so much for being here, Rob. I really appreciate it, man.
No worries.
Take it easy.
Thank you. See ya.
No cheers?
Cheers.
Oh, thanks. So there you have it. Both Rob and I could go on and on and on about lighting consoles and control. And we'd be happy to talk with you further about it if you'd like. You can reach Rob or I through the Contact Us page on iSquint.net. We hope you gained a little bit brighter of an understanding on what to look for in your next lighting console. Once again, I'd like to thank Rob for taking time out of his hectic schedule to talk with me about lighting consoles. You are quite the console resource, my friend. I would also like to thank you for downloading and listening to the iSquint podcast. Till next time.